Okay, great. Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures CDP Subgroup B call held on Tuesday, the 29th of January, 2019. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you're only on the audio bridge at this time, could you please let yourself be known now? All right, hearing no names, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I will turn it back over to Krista Taylor. You may begin, Krista.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for joining for Group B. As we can see from the agenda, there are five items. So the first one is obviously welcome and review of the agenda. The other topics are updating of SOIs. Then we're going to continue the discussion on the public comments on 2.7.1, the reserve names, and it's a continuation of the last call where we'll begin on line 93. Then we have our fourth item, which is same discussion of the public comments, but we're going to move to 2.7.2 on registrant protection. And then we have any other business. Is there anything we should be adding to the agenda? Seeing no comments or hands, I'm going to move into the second topic. Are there any state SOI updates? Donna, please go ahead.
Thanks, Krista. Donna Austin. So I've recently updated my SOI to reflect that I'm no longer on the GNSO Council, and I'm now the chair of the Registry Stakeholder Group. Thanks.
Wow, great. Thanks, Donna, and congratulations. Anyone else have any updates to their SOI? I'm guessing that's an old hand, Donna, so I'm just going to continue on, but if not, please interrupt me. Okay. So jumping into item number three, which is the continuation of the reserve names on line 93 of the document. And so I'm just going to change gears here. So on line 93, we have section 2.7.1E.3.1, and the question was, should there be any limit to the number of names reserved by a registry operator? Why or why not? The first one we have is INTA saying no, there shouldn't be a limit. Then we have the IPC that says there should be implementation of a suitable strategy for allowing the priority rights of trademark holders when these reservations are released for registration. Then a specific limit should not be necessary. However, as it is now, methods are inadequate to support an unlimited number of name reservations. We then have the GOTLD group and Dot Berlin and the Hamburg top-level domain, all with an identical comment stating that there should be no limit to the number of names reserved by the registry operator. And they go on to say, asking GOTLDs to follow a route where formerly reserved names have to go through a sunrise phase is simply not doable. And they explain a little bit on the logic there. So actually, I'll just make it because there are three of them with the same. They say, typically, many reserved names under the GOTLDs are reserved for public administration tasks, which make those names unavailable for any other entity other than the administration itself. In our experience, issuing claims notices for reserved names is more than sufficient. We never had any complaint doing such releases. The next comment is from the Registry Stakeholder Group, and they're referring to their response in section 2.7.1.E.3, and that section refers to, or that comment referred to, the registrar requirements are being circumvented, and but it's not overly clear on the actual whether there should be a restriction or not. Then we also have the RSG saying that it depends on the release procedure and how and if they are going to sell the domains with a reasonable limit on the number of reserved domains, for example, 10,000. You will essentially create a closed TLD. And then they go on saying, if the registry operator is going to reserve an excessive number of domains, those must or should be disclosed to registrars prior to them signing a contract to offer the TLD, as the size of the reserved list could be detrimental to registrar activity to offer the TLD. Further, when those names are unreserved, they should be allocated through the registrar channel and not directly to the end customers by the registries. So that's a kind of a new idea there. We then have Jamie Baxter of .gay with a divergent point of view, saying that he agrees with having a limit. However, there should be a path to exemption under certain circumstances, especially for those looking to innovate in the gTLD space or offer additional benefit to registrants and internet users. Then we have another divergent point of view from LeMerit, saying that there should be, they support a limit of no more than 5,000 reserved names, including their IDN variants, to avoid circumvent of the requirements from the registry code of conduct set forth in Spec 9. We then have Yadgar with a divergent point of view, and I believe this is probably more suitable for the premium name section, but they refer to allowing registries to reserve as many domains as they want, and allowing them to also charge high premiums for domains, where ICANN has done to create a monopolistic registries, which for all intents and purposes act exactly as domain investors, only they have a practical unlimited inventory. Then they go on further, say, giving one company a monopoly over a whole extension so that they can act exactly like a domain investor seems very wrong. And then they add that, or they propose that future extensions should have rules that will forbid registries from reserving an unlimited amount of domains and put some kind of cap in the number of domains that a registry can charge a premium for. So suggested that we also add this to the premium name section for that to be further, I guess, considered. Then we have the brand registry group, saying that suitable measures should be employed to identify risk of confusion, and where risks are identified, reserve these strings. Doesn't really seem to be answering the question on should there be a max or number, along with Valadeus, who say the unlimited reservation of names does not raise concerns for brand owners, where those names are subsequently released from reservation after the sunrise has concluded. And they also point out, see the response in the next section, which we're going to see in 3.3. So that's all the comments to 2.7.1.E.3.1. Anne, I see you have your hand raised. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Krista. Just as in 105, we noted that there were concerns and relates to brands, certainly on line 95 of the Google Doc, the IPC comments would have to be designated as concerns. Because, for example, you know, you read the last sentence of their comment, our comment, I should say, and it's, you know, much more similar to the Valadeus comment, and it should, so 95 should be concerned.
Perfect. Thank you, Anne. And sorry, I didn't really do the agreement or disagreement initially because it didn't seem as fitting as maybe it should with a question. So, like last week, I didn't say whether they agreed or didn't. It was just more of did they answer the question? But we'll make sure that's noted as a concern.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Krista, this is Christine. Can I get in the queue?
Please go ahead, Christine.
Thanks. Sorry about that. I hope you can hear me. I just wanted to note that I think there's a lot of concerns with divergence about this topic, and so I think probably we're going to be bringing this back to the full group. But I wanted to also highlight that the RPMs is touching on the same topics right now. So I'm going to bring this to them as well. But there's a lot of discussion going on between reserve names, premium names, whether or not, you know, domains are reserved to the registry before or after sunrise. So it would be really great to get some collaboration between the various groups working on this as the subpro starts to make some more final recommendations. Thanks.
Thanks, Christine. That would be great. And, yeah, we can always bring this to the full group, especially if we have those other concerns or other feedback, so everyone can get a complete picture. So that would be great. Any other comments on Section E3.1? Cheryl, I see you say, but they do respond to the question on limits of agreeing to have to having one. Seeing no other comments, I'm going to jump to the next section, which is on line 106. And the question is, should the section E.3.2, should the answer to the above question be dependent on the type of TLD for which the names are reserved, i.e. a brand TLD, geographic TLD, or community-based TLD, and or a open TLD? And if so, please explain. So we have Jamie Baxter of .gay with the new idea that he would likely include community-based TLDs as an approved type specifically because community support for registry use of additional reserve names could be shown through a written endorsement at the time of the application submission. We then have a new idea from the GOTLD group suggesting that there should be no limit to the number of names reserved by a registry operator. As mentioned before, geographic namespaces have a broad set of target groups and thus a large community with different needs which need to be respected. Goes on to say, asking GOTLDs to follow a route where formerly reserved names have to go through a sunrise phase is simply not doable, and issuing claims notices for reserved names is more than sufficient. We then have another, that's the same comment for the GOTLD group, .Berlin, and the Hamburg top-level domain. We then have the RSG with a new idea suggesting that closed.brand TLD should have unlimited reservations and that limitations should be weighted against the impact of the community due to such reservations. We then have Valadeus stating that restrictions would be irrelevant for single registrant TLDs, for instance, Spec 9 and Spec 13 brands. We then have the IPC, similar idea that does not believe that there should be any limitations on reservations for exclusive use TLDs. Same with Fairwinds Partners. They refer to Section 271E.1 with the removal limit for brands. Then we have the Registry Stakeholder Group with their note that we saw, I think, before on that registrar's requirements are being circumvented. Then we have Lemerit saying, no, the limit should be the same for all TLD types. And finally, we have the Brand Registry Group referring to Section 2.7.1E.1 and 2.7.1C.3 for the recommendation that also acknowledges the concerns raised regarding confusing strings such as 5 and S should be avoided, and suitable measures should be employed to identify risk of confusion, and where risks are identified, reserve these strings. So not really answering the question there, but the idea has been captured. Any comments to that section? Thank you, Cheryl. Seeing no comments, I'm just going to jump into the next section, and then we can always come back. So we're on line 118, and the question on section 2.7.1.E.3 is, during the 2012 round, there was no requirement to implement a sunrise process for second-level domain names removed from a reserved names list and released by a registry operator if the release occurred after the general sunrise period for the TLD. Should there be a requirement to implement a sunrise for names released from the reserved names list regardless of when those names are released? And please explain. We have the RSG saying that support sunrise for names removed from the reserved names list only if it's commercially feasible. And they go on to say that mechanisms which would make this process commercially feasible. If a mechanism cannot be developed, then a sunrise process for these names should not be required. We have the IPC saying, as I stated above, is that this is not necessary as names that are released post-sunrise are done so inconsistently and in a non-uniform way. A sunrise period for subsequent releases or reserved names is the best way to give priority to trademark holders. We have LeMerit saying after release, the names, they should pass a sunrise period for at least 90 days, and that the trademark holders should, of course, have the opportunity to register the names corresponding to their brands before names go into general availability to the public. We have INTA that has the concern on the reservation of unlimited number of names and the release of them later, that is circumventing the rights of protection mechanisms. And where the names are released after the registry sunrise period has ended, there is currently no obligation to offer the names for sunrise registration, but only to run a 90-day trademark claims. They further go on to saying reserving trademark terms and releasing them later denies access to one of the measures. And to allow trademark owners who have recorded their trademarks in a trademark clearinghouse a right of first refusal, for example, where a TMCH record existed during the original sunrise and trademark owner was prevented from registering the domain name due to the term being reserved. And finally, they should be given sufficient notice to ensure that they are able to participate. We then have Validaeus with a concern that the registry would run a, while this may not have the intention for many registry operators, the ability to reserve names and release them later after the end of the sunrise has the capacity to be used by the registry to circumvent the new GTLD RPM requirements. And ideally, they would run a second sunrise period, but this is likely to be impractical. So they have, but they do support the development of measures to allow trademark owners with a trademark record in the TMCH to have a right of first refusal if a matching domain name is released from the reservation after the sunrise period. And then we have the registry stakeholder group, which is referring to their comment in above, which is 2.7.1.E.3, which is, I believe, there shouldn't be a sunrise period. I'm just going to check on that, but I'll meantime checking to see if anyone has any comments to that section. Um, Yeah, the Registry Stakeholder Group is the comment in the above section was on line 85, saying reserve names already have to go through a claims period allowing trademark misuse to be detected, and they go into the GOTLDs where there's no other mechanism to reserve names for public services. Any comments to section 2.7.1.E.3.3? And Cheryl's been bringing us back to line 125, which is section 1.E.4 with a question. Some in the community object to the measures for letter 2 character ASCII labels to avoid confusion with corresponding country codes adopted by the ICANN board on 8th of November 2016. Is additional work needed in this regard? We have the ALAC, who has the concern that avoidance of end-user confusion is paramount consideration to the ALAC, and all practical and reasonable measures must be considered and implemented to safeguard this end-user protection principle. We then have the Brand Registry Group stating that no additional work is required. We have the RSG that discourages any additional work in this regard. We have INTA also in agreement that the measures seem to be complete, so no additional work needs to be necessary, along with Fairwinds Partners with the same agreement, and the Registry Stakeholder Groups also with the same agreement. Valideus, who also notes a prior comment which is in agreement with it. And then we have two divergent point of views. One is from the Government of India that opposes the release of two-character country codes at the second level, and they'd like to reiterate that they have always objected to the release of two-character country codes at the second level and have communicated this with the ICANN board previously. And then finally, we have the GAC that wishes to draw the attention to two sections, which is one, work as soon as possible with the GAC members who have expressed serious concerns with respect to the release of their two-character country code, territory codes at the second level, in order to establish an effective mechanism to resolve the concerns in a satisfactory manner. And secondly, immediately take necessary steps to prevent further negative consequences for the concerned GAC members arising from the November 2016 board resolution. So that is the end of section 2.7.1.E.4. Anyone have any comments to that section? Anyone still awake? No. So that does the entire section for reserve names, which is 2.7.1. And we'll move on to the next section. And Rubens, I will turn it over to you.
Thanks, Kristen. Good time of day, everyone. Rubens Q here. We'll now start the next tab in our Google Docs, which is section 272, Hedgehog Protections, which was a section mostly dealt by WorkTrack 2. We start by one general comment that was made by ESSEC that actually goes into two different things. One is background screening, and the other is financial evaluation. So while you soon discuss their comment in 272C3, which was also added there, we should point out that this should probably be also be copied to 277 applicant reviews, since this also mentioned financial evaluation per se, not only background screening. But we can then move on to our were actual questions and comments from reviewers. We start first by 272C1, which was a recommendation to maintain the existing ABRO mechanism, including triggers for an ABRO event and the critical registry functions that ABROs provide, as well as each other of the protections identified above. And we had support from ALIC to this idea, also support from Newstar, and those were the more simple agreements. We then have some qualified agreements from Registry Stakeholder Group and Valideos, and let's see what those two has to qualify in that regard. The Registry Stakeholder Group in line 9 say that requiring both Ibero and the continued operating instrument is unnecessarily bundlesome. So the Registry Stakeholder Group is trying to take to the committee to determine to have one of those, but not both of those protection elements. And we have a qualification from Valideos that the recommendation, that they agree with the recommendation, but the relationship between an EBR event or a registry failure event that's covered by an Ibero and the invocation of the continued operational instrument to be clarified. So besides agreement and agreement with qualifications, we have one disagreement of line 7 from the branch registry group. The branch registry group said that they appreciate the purpose of the Ibero system and why it was introduced, but say that it doesn't relate well to some models of registries, particularly brand TLDs, where the registry operator is the single registrant or only affiliates and trademark licensees. So these capture the whole spectrum of agreement, qualification, and divergence for this option of keeping the Ibero system as it is. Any comments, remarks on that? None. Let's move on to the other option. The other option would say that single registrant TLDs, including those under specification 13, which are brand TLDs, should be exempt from Ibero requirements. That is supported by the brand registry group, the business constituency, Newstar, Fairwind Partners, registry stakeholder group, and at least one those with no qualifications. Let's look at also at other comments that were made that also agreed, but imposed some qualifications for agreements. One is from ICANN.org in line 14. It said that as such it would be helpful if the PDP working group could clarify whether the Ibero exemption suggested in this preliminary recommendation tend to apply only to single registrant TLDs or if the exemption extends to all registry operators with a specification 13, some of whom may not be single registrants. I believe the recommendation said by itself that it included the specification 13, but it's, if someone is asking, that is not because it's not clear enough. So it's possibly something for the full work group to address how to better clarify that it also applies to specification 13 brand TLDs. We also have in line 18 from Valideos, commented the recommendation, TLD with one registrant that also happens to be an affiliate of the registry operator do not require the registrant protections created for Ethereum model, since there are no third-party registrants to be protected. For the sake of clarity, we think such an exemption from either requirements would include an exemption from having to obtain continuous operation instrument, and should apply to registrants which have an specification from, which have an exemption from specification 9, which is the code of conduct of the register agreement. So we are agreeing, but saying that not having an IBRO requirement also meant to be not having a continuous operational instrument. So that's what Validel is clarifying their comment. We have also a qualifier from Mark Monitor. They noted that some of those protections are inapplicable and can be unduly onerous on dot brand register operators, which is an agreement, but saying why they agree instead of just agreeing. And we have an agreement from ASSEC, and the qualifier, they added that if any GTLD is exempted from IBRO requirements, there must first be some assurance that no other domain outside the exempted GTLD can ever rely upon the exempted JS unit for resolution. The scenario they are describing is that, for instance, if there is a .sec as a brand TLD, and there is a domain called nameservers.sec, and that some registrant use domain name servers in that domain, for instance, to register a .org domain, let's say sec.org, has name servers in nameservers.sec, and those name servers are not protected. They are concerned with that case, so it might be something to include as a warning to those not seeking IBRO protection. So, what are the impacts of not having, but otherwise we had, as Cheryl said, a sea of green in this question, which is good, and not seeing also any comments or remarks here from the room. Let's move to 272C3 on line 21, which is the recommendation to continue to allow publicly traded companies to be exempt from background screening requirements as they undergo extensive similar screenings and extend the exemption to officers, directors, material shareholders of, et cetera, of those companies. And we have agreements with that idea from the branch registry group, from the business constituency, Newstar, Fairwinds partners, registry stakeholder group, and Validels. We also have one agreement with qualifier from ICANN.org. They have a suggestion to consider whether there should be some flexibility to address those issues, as was done in 2012, and to consider where background screening should be performed during initial evaluation of contracting. The preliminary recommendation included both companies and directors should be excluded, but based on their experience in some cases, some issues were uncovered in background screening of a public trade company as well as officers and directors, shareholders. So we are suggesting the work group to taking their experience into consideration. And also considering the large number of change requests on the question 11, which was the question that identified officers of the company, whether that background screen should be performed during initial evaluation or contracting, because if it keeps moving during evaluation, it ends up generating a costly burden on them, while if they do that at contracting, they would do it a single time with the snapshot of those officers and shareholders at contracting. So this is the suggestion ICANN.org is bringing in. And we have at lines 29 and 30 divergences from the same ideas from ITC and ESSEC. What ITC said is that they believe ICANN should subject all registrants, include public trade companies and their affiliates, for background check, which provide more transparency in the application process and prevent disingenuous registrations. I believe it, when the ITC said registrants, they are mentioning applicants and not domain registrants, which is something that's usually not done, and unless perhaps for verified TLDs. Most TLDs don't do background check on the registrants, but from context, I believe we can assume it was meant to be applicants. And ESSEC made a comment, which as I mentioned, was general comment, that public trade companies must not be exempted from the financial evaluation. The barrier to public trade is very low in some jurisdictions, such as penny stocks in the United States, and such companies do not undergo extensive screenings. For example, in the USA, not all public companies are subject to the Securities and Exchange Commission's reporting requirements. Exemptions should not be extended to officers, directors, material shareholders of those companies, all of whom should be subject to background screening. Just a side comment to that, I don't believe that I can allow it any stock exchange, even larger countries such as U.S., to trigger an exemption. Only very large exchanges such as NASDAQ and NYSE. But their comment still is worthwhile indicating that there are some conditions that might not be of size of the country that could trigger insufficient investigation, but even in that case, they are opposing that exemption to background screening. So with that, let's see if someone has any comments on 272C3. Seeing none, let's move to 272C4, which Jerry already included the lines in the chat. The suggestion was to improve the background screening process to be more accommodating, meaningful, and flexible for different regions of the world. For example, in entities in jurisdictions that do not provide readily available information. And we have most agreements. Let's see what are the agreements without qualifiers from USTAR, Registry Stakeholder Group, Valideus, and IPC. But we have two agreements with qualifiers from the Brand Registry Group and from Business Constituency. Let's take a more closer look at them. From the Brand Registry Group, they said that with incremental improvements may be made, BRG believes the existing screening process is a reasonable baseline for using the future, and subsequent change should not reduce the effectiveness of the screening process. And what the business constituency suggestion is should include a full review of prior complaints and breaches involving DNS activities by the applicant and its executives. Why I believe a somewhat light review of those is already included in 2012 AGB. I believe business constituents know that and saying that there should be an extra mile there for a more true review of those complaints, specifically regarding DNS activity. And do we have any questions? 272C4 regarding background screening? Hearing none, we then go to 272E1, for we had a single comment The proposal was that the liberation section below discuss several alternate methods to fund the Ibero program. Please provide any feedback you have on the proposed method and other methods to fund Ibero in subsequent procedures. The registry stakeholder group response was an overarching response to each of the ideas, repeating the idea that requiring both Ibero and COI is unnecessarily bundlesome. So it's actually a repeat of previous comments. So let's move to 272E2. Should specific types of TLD to be exempt from certain resident protections? If yes, which ones should be exempt? Should the exemption extend to TLDs under specification 9, which have a single registrant, or for TLDs under specification 13, for which registrants are limited to the registrar operator affiliates and trademark licensees? If you believe exemption should apply, under what conditions and why, and if why, why not? It's a very open-ended question, so we have even the agreement or divergence mostly come with qualifiers. The first one is from Marquis, Mark Association, that they believe there should be a uniform application process for all without categorizations. But with this uniform process, should be direct down up if it facilitates participation and fair evaluation. So, and they end up qualifying that they support exemptions for brands applying for a single entity registry exclusively for their own purpose. The Duende Registry Group also supported the idea of an exemption from both Specification 9 called the Founded and Specification 3 Brand TLD Registry Operators, which is not the case of the Registry Stakeholder Group that said that no, there should be no exemptions. And the registrar stakeholder group is concerned that exemptions would open the door to gain or abuse. If exemption permitted, should be only on a case-by-case basis. So while they not oppose exemptions wholesale, they think that shouldn't be a category rule. It could be some specific cases, but not all. Newstar also agreed to support single registered TLDs, mentioned that this is both those carrying specification 13 or specification 9 exemptions. Lemerich also agreed that specification 9, specification 13 should be exempt from Ibero and COI. But they do have a comment that have in mind the fact that all registration TLDs on the spec 13 are closed, no risk for the public interest occurs. And if the registration policy for the brand register operates stays locked for changes from closed to open registration, and as it's now according to spec 13, the COI, respectively one of the CI instruments, letter of credit, are irrelevant requirements. Even though they are agreeing, they are reminding us of something that is relevant, that a TLD can move from being a spec 13 or spec 9 TLD to being an open TLD. So if there is such exemptions, then the process for removing those exemptions would probably include adding the same registrant protections as a commercial TLD. Fairwind partner also mentioned that specification 9 and specification 13 TLD should be exempt, and they say why they believe so, more in agreement with all those matters. The registry stakeholder group also in agreement and specifying why they agree with that. And the SF mentions that same case I mentioned before, where a domain in exempted or single registered GTLD could be used as name server or some sort of technical dependency, not only name servers, for a domain that is not, and that domain ceases to function. So we repeat that same comment. Any questions on 272E2? Seeing none, let's go to 272E3. ICANN's program implementation review report stated that it may be helpful to considering adjust background screening requires follow for meaningful review in different circumstances. Examples cited include newly formed entities and companies in jurisdictions that do not provide readily available information. Please provide feedback on ICANN's suggestion along with any suggestions to make applicant background screening more relevant and relevant and meaningful. Brain Registry Group referred to another of the comments, which was a support in general for those changes, provided that they don't reduce the effectiveness of the screening process. The business constituency made a suggestion background check should include reviewed in effectivity, which is more aligned with a previous comment, and not much with the question, but they chose to answer like this. And they said that background checks should include a full review of prior complaints and breaches involved in DNS activities by the applicant and its executives. And the registry stakeholder group also mentioned a previous response where they support continuing the existing background screening process that they are appropriate and supports keeping this substantially the same form. Seeing no hands, no comments in this, let's move to 272E4, which was asked, should publicly traded companies be exempt from background screening requirements? If so, should the officers, directors, and material shareholders of the company also be exempt? Should affiliates of public trade comment be exempt? The ALEC feels a divergence and saying that no ALEC maintains a right to subject all registrants, and I believe they were referring to applicants in this context, including public trade companies and their affiliates, to a background check. So they do not agree with that exemption. On the other hand, we have some agreements, each one with their own qualifiers. The Brand Registry Stakeholder Group supports extending these exemptions to affiliates of publicly traded companies. Business constituents support exempting publicly traded companies, although they didn't mention supporting or not supporting, including affiliates of such publicly traded companies. Current partners supported all parties mentioned in the question, which would be the publicly traded companies that is affiliates of being exempt. And the registry for the group support to keep the exemption to publicly traded companies and to extend the exemption to officers, directors, material shareholders, and to affiliates using the definition of affiliate in the base registry agreement. So this was 272E4 about background screening. Seeing no hands, no comments, we can move to 272E5. WorkTrack is considering a proposal to include additional questions directly below to support the background screening process. So this question be added, why or why not? And the questions are, have you had a contract with ICANN terminated or are being terminated for compliance issues? Have you of your company been part of an entity found in breach of contract with ICANN? The ALAC supports those additional checks, and they mentioned that ensuring that applicants are reputable is a large part of ensuring that new charities operate for the safety of Internet end users. The business consistency also agrees with the inclusion of those two questions and mentioned that they believe there was insufficient attention to prior activities in the 2012 round, but we have divergent comments from Newstar and from registry stakeholder groups. Let's see what the qualifiers are all about. Newstar mentioned that prior contractual compliance issues with ICANN are not necessarily indicative of the applicant's ability to operate a registry and should not be ground for disqualification. The risk that these questions are seeking to uncover are addressed by other screening mechanisms. And the registry stakeholder group mentioned that they appreciate the intent behind this question, but they do not support adding these questions to the background screening process. They mentioned that breach of a registry agreement registry agreement, and possibly they were trying to mention registry accreditation agreement, may happen for a number of reasons. It should not be grounds de facto for disqualification. And they mean there are already other mechanisms in place to discover any potential risks that are underlying things behind the question. So that was 272E5. We do have some other comment that wasn't classified anywhere else, that the standards for there's a comment from ALAC, that the standards for applicants should remain high and be applied effectively and consistently. Finally, a number of questions address the question of registrant protections or more broadly, the standards that should be applied to applicants for new charities. So while the ALAC considers them might be special circumstances that require adjusting the evaluation process to accommodate applicants for underserved regions and perhaps brand TLDs, the ALAC maintains that standard for applicants should remain high. Furthermore, they believe that whatever standards are ultimately set, ICANN should do a better job of applying those standards during the application process that was done during the 2012 round. There are certain instances when applicants that failed to meet the registration protection instances were nonetheless allowed to proceed, casting the shadow of impropriety on the entire process. So I believe this is a general comment more targeted ICANN org than the PDP working group, but you should probably take that in regard while assessing potential changes to registrant protections. And that's it for our session of today, since we just ended 272 registrant protections. And all we have now is something that I don't remember, which is date of the next subgroup B session, and perhaps any other business, if there is any other business, but besides that, could any other business would be knowing the time and date of the next session, which is Julie's, is probably typing for us as of now.
Hey, Ruben, this is Julie Hedlund from staff. So the time of the next subgroup B meeting is actually Tuesday, February 5th, and it's at 1700 UTC.
Thanks, Julie.
And so the next tab that I think we would go to is closed generics, 2.7.3.
And for the next call, we have a topic that has no controversies whatsoever, which is 273 closer generics. And with that, we can stop the recording and see you all at the next recall. Bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Ruben and Krista. Great progress today.
Thank you.
Bye for now.
Bye, all.
Thanks, everyone. Today's meeting's adjourned. You can disconnect your lines and have a good rest of your day.